The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Hi there, Sam Sorbo here. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. My guest is Dr. John West. He's the vice president and a senior fellow at the Seattle-based Discovery Institute, where he also serves as managing director of the Institute's Center for Science and Culture, which he actually co-founded with philosopher of science Stephen Meyer, who's been on the show before. Let me introduce you now to Dr. John West.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's great to speak with you. You've written just recently about someone who I'm very interested in, frankly. Mm-hmm. Francis Collins. Collins is the director of the NIH, the National Institutes mm-hmm. of Health, and he announced his intention to step down at the end of 2012. Mm-hmm. But he's done some rather, in my mind, controversial things. And so I thought maybe we could start this conversation with who he was mm-hmm. before he entered that realm, or before he took that position, I suppose, because that's how I got mm-hmm. to know him.
Sure. So Francis Collins, actually for the past 12 years, has been the head of the NIH. So he's basically been the top scientist in the federal government. Before that, he was most known for a couple things. One was directing the Human Genome Project that provided one of the original sort of beginning maps of our genome, which is very important. And then in the faith community, among evangelical Christians, he was known for writing a book called The Language of God and telling his personal story, which I don't question, by the way. I am going to criticize him because I think there's some serious issues here, especially Christian leaders in the evangelical community, of which I would count myself as an evangelical, have been avoiding for 15, 20 years. I mean, but he has a really interesting personal story. He had been an atheist as a young man, and then partly through the works of C.S. Lewis, found God and found Christ. And so he's very big on his personal faith in Jesus, which I think is sincere. But
let me just interject for just a moment, because I got to know him through the Human Genome Project mm-hmm. and a book that he had written about that. And mm-hmm. it seemed to me, and this is just my interpretation, and I don't know him, that his sort of conversion to faith was also informed by the discovery of the human genome and the mapping of it, and the fact that he could map it. And in a sense, to put it very simply, it was sort of like, oh my gosh, that's like a fingerprint of a creator. And there's no way that this just happened by accident, kind of thing.
Yeah, except that is what most people think, and his book is titled The Language of God, based on something done at the early press conference. But if you actually read through all the book, it's interesting. He actually spends a lot of time in that foundational book, where he's gotten a lot of credit for, describing how he thinks the genome and life are littered with junk, and that's an example of why we're the product of Darwinian evolution. And so, in a strange sort of way, actually, he doesn't think the genome or DNA really is the fingerprint of God. I mean, in some way, but he actually thinks that the genome, he actually says at one point in the book that close to 45%, which actually turned out to be not true, I mean, it is basically junk DNA, functionless, flotsam and jetsam. And, you know, this is showing that we actually weren't directly, you know, he's implying there that we weren't sort of directly created by a process specifically directed by God, because there's so much junk and non-functional stuff in there. And he makes this argument.
That's so weird. That is not at all my and I read the book. That's not at all my recollection, although my recollection includes his skepticism. And I thought at the end of the book, he sort of came around, but
it's a double-minded book. No. I mean, it's a double-minded book. So he does in the book talk about how he doesn't think Darwinian evolution could produce morality, and that was sort of key to his conversion. He does talk about fine-tuning and think that, you know, in cosmology there's some evidence of what we would call design. But when it comes to biology, which is sort of the holy grail where you cannot question Darwin, he actually has two positions. One is he's saying, you know, our genome is littered with stuff that, and so this is an example of why God didn't really direct it. It was this evolutionary process, which he implies is in some sense unguided. But then I think he does realize that that's a problem for many Christians and maybe for himself. So then he offers another option, which also is highly problematic, where he actually says on one page that, well, perhaps God did guide. He actually uses the word could. So he doesn't actually definitively say that God did specifically guide the development of life. But then he says, well, but maybe God made it look like a random and undirected process. Well, I'll just tell you, 2,000 years of Christian theology, let alone the Bible talking about the heavens declare the glory of God, the Bible doesn't, and Christian tradition, doesn't teach that God hid his actions in creating life. In fact, it says the opposite. And so offering even that as an option, that, well, maybe God did direct, but he made it look random and undirected, is, I'd say, not of great faith-science integration.
Right, and you know, I didn't make a full study of who Francis Collins was. Sure. I came away from the book with a favorable impression. No. But I think what you're referring to is I think it's called evolutionary creationism.
Yeah, it goes by different terms: theistic evolution, evolutionary creation. He termed the term biologos, which he got from John, which is actually a very interesting story theologically, because, and the history of the Christian faith. So he takes that from, you know, the Logos, Christ, that's mentioned as, you know, the creator of all in John 1:1, and then bios, you know, life, you know, biological life. The interesting thing is, if you go back to the early church fathers, the reason why John wrote his gospel, according to one of the early church fathers, was to counter an error being preached at the time, which was that God himself was not directly involved in specifically directing the development of life. One of the Gnostic teachers, Cerinthus, taught that. And so in early John, where it says that, you know, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and that basically everything, nothing, not one thing in all creation was created without him, they were actually counting a view that is, I would say, very like some of the things that Francis Collins has dabbled in. But I agree, look, Francis Collins, I'm not questioning the sincerity of his faith. He has a wonderful story from being an atheist materialist as a young man and then becoming a Christian. And that's why I think many people look up to him. And I think also because of the double-mindedness of that book, where he says good things, but then there are these other strange things, that I think, you know, people remember, you know, the title, The Language of God, and the good things.
Right.
But I guess the reason I'm highlighting, that book came out in 2006. The reason why I'm highlighting that is I think that the seeds of what I could focus on today about his record and what he's been doing, really you can see it in that book. Even some of the things on pro-life, there's an appendix to that book where he sort of cast doubt on the idea that life begins at conception. And so I think that you actually, if you go back and reread that book, you will actually see a lot of the roots of, maybe they're not so prominent, sort of because the double-mindedness, and there are good things in the book, but you can see really where he ended up going, unfortunately. And he's, for me, it's troubling because I don't think our personal faith in Christ for a public official who can do a lot of damage and hurt immunizes you against accountability. And Francis Collins is a very folksy guy. He's a very gregarious guy, so he forms a lot of friendships with, you know, leading pastors, leading theologians, and they've sort of been very uncritical no matter what he's done, and not even being willing to engage the public things he's done that are actually really hurtful, I would say, both to the witness of Christ, but to individual people, and really is not something to uphold as a model.
So let's get into that, because this piece that you wrote gets into that. This is very current day stuff. And so where is the departure that you see here?
So I think there are actually many, but and I haven't written about all of them yet, but two big things. I think one is his record on life. And most people would, you know, consider evangelical Christian, he must be pro-life. Well, no, actually he has defended eugenic abortions of killing, our society has said it's important, so therefore, you know, it's okay, of Down syndrome kids. But then as director of NIH, some people may know that he was a big champion of embryonic stem cell research, which involved the destruction of human embryos. What they may not know, because a lot of this just came out this year, is that he actually has overseen massive, you know, fairly substantial federal funding for organ harvesting from aborted babies that are as old as 42 weeks. And frankly, this is another thing. His NIH has tried to cover it up. Some of the information I'm giving
out. Hold on.
Sure.
42 weeks.
That's full term and beyond.
Right. Just checking because.
So we found out that by a group, Judicial Watch, actually had to file a lawsuit because the NIH, under Francis Collins, wouldn't give them the information. So that came out just in August, where multi-millions of our tax dollars have been spent to develop a national tissue bank of aborted fetal baby parts. And for the research they want to do, you have to have, I think it's from 6 weeks to 42 weeks, because they need the organs, they need the, that's what they need for the research. And so we have funded, he has funded, and I'll say, I've asked his media people, I've sent in requests, how do you justify this? And crickets, you know, they won't respond. He won't respond. But that's not all. You also have to look at earlier this year, there was testimony in before the legislature in Pennsylvania where it came out that some of the actual research, funding to fund this tissue bank, you know, from all these aborted babies. But then there's also additional research they're funding using some of this. And one of them, and in one of my articles, you can actually go to the link to it and see the pictures if you have the stomach for it, is basically they took from an 18 to 20 week old babies who, you know, by then they can feel, you know, feel things. They have heartbeats, they have brain waves, they can move doing various things. They harvested them to create mice-human hybrids. And they took the organs, they pulverized them up in various ways and used them, and then they cut the scalp out of the babies and latched them on to the mice to do some various research, and he funded that. And again, he hasn't wanted to respond on that. More than that, you know, I've engaged with some people since
hold
I've
on,
written the
article. Hold on. Yeah. He hasn't responded at all, but we have the documentation proving...
Yes. There's no question about this stuff.
Why is he stepping down? Do we know why he's stepping down after 12 years?
No, there's a lot of speculation. I mean, I don't have any secret knowledge. Some have speculated it's yet another scandal that occurred this year, which is relating to COVID. And I'm not getting to. I'm not a scientist. I'm a public policy person, so I don't have any dog in that fight of what are the original origins of COVID. But, there's been some speculation in the mainstream media this year about lab leaks and other things. So over the past year, Collins and his friend Anthony Fauci, who works under him, have steadfastly claimed that there is no gain-of-function research on pathogens that they funded in China. And gain-of-function research can take viruses and things and then help make them stronger, help do various things to try to find out some legitimate things, but it's dangerous research. And so some people have wondered, even in the mainstream, is some of the stuff we funded sort of the origins, incidentally, of this? But over the past year and a half, he and Fauci have said steadfastly, we didn't fund anything like that. Well, lo and behold, a journalist group on the left wing, not right wing, last month, September, actually released a data trove of documents that show, the NIH actually did fund gain-of-function research. And so some major scientists, including a biologist at Rutgers University, has basically called both Collins and Fauci untruthful on that. And so some have speculated, but I don't know that he's worried about... when people investigate his statements on that could raise things. But, he's been there a long time. He's older, and he may want to go back to speaking more in the Christian community, doing other things. I don't know. But he has had it between the abortion funding that's come out this year and then the Wuhan thing that just came out last month where he went on talk radio and other places to say, we didn't do anything like that. Well, that looks not to be true. It is certainly true. Maybe he doesn't want to deal with that, but I don't know. There's the abortion, but then I actually think there's the other thing involving vaccine mandates. And I'm not getting into issues, YouTube or anyone else, about, I actually think people should get vaccines depending on their risk profile. That's not the issue I'm challenging Collins on.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back with the second half of my interview with Dr. John West. Which will be available on sorbos.locals.com. If you're listening on podcast and radio, just stay tuned. I'll be back with more of the show. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Hi there. Welcome back to the show. I'm Sam Sorbo. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. My guest now is Chad Prather. He is the author of a new book called Am I Crazy? And we're going to talk to him about perhaps the answer to that. By the way, Chad, I just want to tell you, I told Braden that you were coming on the show and he was very excited.
Well, you know, I was thinking about Braden when I got the invitation to come on the show. Please tell him I said hello.
Oh, that's funny. I thought you were thinking about him when you wrote the book because he's a little bit crazy. I think all of us have gone slightly crazy lately.
Yeah, you got to be the right kind of crazy. And talking about Braden, you know, he definitely is the right kind of crazy, right? Because we're facing a weird crumbling culture. I've started affectionately referring to this book as my common sense guide to the end of the world, because let's face it, culturally, we're seeing a downward spiral that I don't know that we're ever going to quite get under control again, because the woke mob has taken over in such a wild, progressive, lefty, lunatic way that unless we really arm ourselves with some common sense, we're in a lot of trouble.
What I see is in the youth community, because youth are typically skeptical, and now that the woke mafia has sort of gained control, as you say, the youth are skeptical of that. And I think that the struggle comes with the desire to be a victim. Like, it's very seductive to be a victim. What do you make of that?
So I think that we've lived such a cushioned life of ease in America, and people try to they define their existence by the pain they've been through. You've been in those stories where you tell your story and then somebody tries to top it and they go, you know, I can tell one worse. Well, we really haven't experienced a lot of oppression, persecution, or pain in America. We're somewhat spoiled compared to the rest of the world. So what we've had to do is create our oppressions. And it's taken the form of so many woke progressive concepts like, you know, gender persecution or pronouns or which bathroom I use. And you know, so many, just to name a few, everything becomes racial or it becomes misogynistic. And everybody has a story, right? And so we're kind of creating our persecutions in order to define our existence. And when you don't have any real problems, you start creating problems, you know. Demi Lovato, which is nonsensical, but it's so empathetical of what we're dealing with, who comes out and says, well, using the word aliens is offensive to extraterrestrials. This is the type of insanity that we're giving a voice to and credence to. You know, you take the AOCs and the Beto O'Rourke's, right? So these are political morons. And we continue to give a voice to these empty-headed people and almost put them to celebrity status. And at some point in time, we've got to say that's enough, because let's face it, let's count the tyrannies. We've got medical tyranny now. We've got educational tyranny. We've got judicial tyranny. We've got government tyranny. We've got media tyranny, big tech. All of these things are ruling over our lives and telling us what reality is. And unfortunately, reality, as they interpret it, isn't reality at all. It's creating this nonsensical victimhood that's created this woke mob that feels persecuted by things that quite simply aren't persecution. So what they're in essence doing, Sam, is they're creating the hard times that they actually wished for. So when we talk about everything woke, you know, goes broke, or as President Trump said, everything woke turns to, that you understand that's exactly right. That is the absolute philosophical delineation of where we're headed culturally. These people are begging for hard times. And unfortunately, based on their logic, that's exactly what they're going to get.
So that's something that Braden started when he was starting out with public speaking. He put it in one of his speeches that hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times or easy times. Easy times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. And so this point, we've had it so good for so long, and I think this is basically your point. We've had it so good for so long, we almost can't help ourselves. Now everything's a problem, because you kind of have to pinch yourself, right? You need that little bit of pain to realize how good you have it, or something. It is kind of odd.
Yeah, we've created. You know, we've even organized our victimhood. You know, BLM.
Oh, yeah, we have the Olympics, the Victimhood Olympics.
Yeah, look at all of it. We've organized it. We've turned it into a movement. You know, Antifa.
Oh, shoot.
And it's not just...
Darling, your connection is really bad, and we can't hear you properly. So you're... Okay, so you're... Futz around with that for just a... Yeah, maybe that's better. So go back to the Antifa. And then let's talk about your book and why people should buy it for Christmas gifts.
Sure. So, you know, we've organized our victimhood, Antifa, BLM, white, you know, Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street, so many different things. And so I wrote this book, you know, it's a common sense perspective, right? I call it an unapologetic patriot that takes on the insanity of today's woke world. Because, you know, am I crazy means, you know, the whole world must be crazy for us to deal with it. And culturally, we're seeing this downfall of our civilization in a big way. So I try to take various examples of how woke progressivism has attacked everything from the family to parenting, marriage, these personalities that we know of in the media, social media, the media, all of these different things that are out there. And I try to take a little common sense, wrap it in humor, make it an easier pill to swallow, easy chapters that are quick reads that folks can laugh through, relate to, find themselves nodding their heads, yes, and actually arm themselves to engage in conversation with culture these days, because let's face it, we are at a war. And I do encourage people, if you're going to get it for Christmas, order it now, because the federal government and the USPS, unfortunately, is about to become even worse than it has been before. So if you're wanting it by Christmas, you better get your order in.
Oh, just to get the order in and get it delivered. Yeah, we're seeing more in supply chain interruptions. I do want to talk to you about some of that stuff, but we're going to do two segments and we're running out of time in this one. And I do want to get in the fact that you're running for governor of Texas.
Sure. Absolutely. I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, no, let's talk about it. Your governor in Texas just did something very admirable. I believe Texas either he signed a law or he encouraged the creation of a law basically going against the and I should say it was a memo basically that Biden put out that companies with more than 100 employees would have to insist on vaccines. It's not even a law. It's not even a like there is no such thing as a mandate, frankly, in the United States of America. But this this directive that he announced hasn't even been picked up, and yet proactively, I would say the current governor said, "Well, that's not going to happen in Texas, right?"
Well, the problem with that is it sounds admirable, and here's the issue that conservatives have with Greg Abbott in the state of Texas. You know, Greg Abbott is a good campaign conservative, and he's proven throughout his last 7 years in office that he's very good at saying the right things. He's not great at doing them. And that's the frustration we all have. So in that regard, I've discovered that if you have enough money, and he does, that you can make yourself appear to be anything. Now, let me explain to you what I mean, because that's not just campaign rhetoric on my part. One, he dug the hole that we're in, Greg Abbott did, by passing down the unilateral mandates that shut down the state and created the masks and the avenue for the vaccines. Now he's trying to dig himself out of it. Well, he doesn't have the right, just like Joe Biden didn't have the right when he announced federal mandates. That was nothing more than a glorified press release, and he's trying to get the media to do his job for him. Well, Greg Abbott just decided this was an executive order, but it still has to pass through the legislation in order to make that into law. So we're in our second special session of the legislative process this year. They've already met three times. And unfortunately, vaccine mandates and forbidding employers from doing it is nowhere on the legislative docket in the House or the Senate. So it sounds good to say, but like a lot of things, including the border and property taxes and spending, the gender modification of children, all of these various things that Greg Abbott is good at talking about, he backs off of them. So, you know, honestly, I hope that by being in this primary race like I am and a couple of others, I hope that we do hold him accountable and keep his feet to the fire to actually follow through, because we can't have these vaccine mandates. They're illegal. They're unconstitutional. And we got to keep people free and certainly the autonomy of their bodies from being attacked like this. We've got to keep up this fight.
Right. Now, I remember now that it was he just wanted the legislature to consider it. The reporting made it sound like he was basically a hero,
right,
which is what reporting does.
Sure.
And so basically, when you go on the campaign trail, and I imagine you're already on the campaign trail, you're speaking about that kind of a thing. But I think the real problem is that people don't understand how our government works. They
right.
think
yeah.
So now we have kings. We have people who just say, like, when I heard the Joe Biden thing, it sounded like it was a done deal. And in fact, on my phone, I'm traveling tomorrow, and I got a text from the airline, and it says federal law requires masks. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. There is no federal law. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right in that regard. And if Joe Biden were able to pass out a dictum like that, it would become an edict, and that would be tyrannical. He would have to be a dictator in order to do that. That's why
never,
we have
and Congress never voted on it, and Biden never signed it into law, and neither did Trump. So how can people walk around, major companies walk around and lie to the American people?
Yeah, and unfortunately, in the state of Texas, we are an at-will state, which means these employers, even if it were mandated that they could that they can't demand the vaccine, they can still fire people for wearing the wrong color shoes. They don't have to have an excuse in the state of Texas. So we have a legislative process here that we really need to go through, and it certainly needs to happen on a federal level. But let's face it, this is an agenda. You know this. This is something they're trying to push through. We can almost write the script at this point, and it's ridiculous. Listen, you know, the Constitution of the United States wasn't written to keep you safe or to keep you healthy. It was written to keep you free. And what's happening right now is the absolute abolition of people's liberties and their freedoms. And we're giving them up because, quite honestly, we don't understand civics or the legislative process in the United States anymore.
Well, yeah, and we don't understand fear. So I'm going to take a quick break with you. We're going to come back and talk more about the book and the mandates and all of this stuff. Chad Prather, if you want, go to Prather2022.com, and you can support his run for the governorship of the great state of Texas. Hey, Chad, not every state can be Florida, let's face it. But, you know,
that's true.
We can, you know, and the thing is that it's great that people like you, I mean, you are a comedian, you are a pundit. You have your show on The Blaze. And by the way, for everybody, tune into The Blaze and watch Chad's show. We need people stepping up to bat. And that's the American way. That's how America was founded. But we also have to talk about education. So stay with me. I'll be right back. If you're listening on podcast and on radio, you can find the rest of this interview on sorbos.locals.com. This is The Sam Sorbo Show. And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show here on sorbos.locals.com. My guest is Chad Prather. He's the host of the Chad Prather Show, and he's also running for governor in 2022. You can go to Prather2022.com for more information about that. But most importantly, well, maybe not most importantly, but also important is his new book, Am I Crazy? An Unapologetic Patriot Takes on the Insanity of Today's Woke World. You must have a lot of words, the newfangled language that we're using. As you probably know, I wrote Words for Warriors to talk about the fact that the left and the woke have basically taken over our language. I mean, we even have the new word woke. I don't know if you've seen now that if you're anti-vax, that includes just being anti-vaccine mandates. Now, if you're against anti-vaccine mandates, you are also lumped into the anti-vax, anti-science crowd, right?
That's right. Yeah, on my show, the Chad Prather Show, we've affectionately started referring to the mandates as well as the boosters, as well as the vaccine, as the blah blah. You know, because they want to penalize you if you use the word vaccine or anything like that. And so we've just started referring it to the blah blah and the blah blah booster and the blah blah mandate. Because again, words matter, and you know, this attack on language as we've seen it. That is one of the chief weapons of this, again, woke mob that's out there. They want to attack people. I had somebody that came to me the other day at a campaign event, and they said, we want you to make a public apology for something you've said in the past. And I said, absolutely not. I mean, read my shirt. I've created a brand of being unapologetic. That's the whole point. And it doesn't mean that we don't regret certain things we say or we don't put our foot in our mouths. But as soon as you start apologizing for words, you're going to spend the rest of your life apologizing, because the cancel mob is going to come after you because they're going to be, again, they feel persecuted by the language you've used. We can't do that. We can't allow the progressive mob to create a language for us and dictate to us because, again, that's a brainwashing process. You control language, you control culture. And we know that politics flows downstream from culture. And so what we're seeing politically today is just an outcropping of what we've allowed to happen in our lives.
Right.
Not the, one of the catalysts for that has been this attack on language.
So let's talk just briefly, because apologies, and I've heard Jordan Peterson say this, the last thing you should do is apologize. Like, unless you truly have misstepped and done something, that is, you know, you may not apologize, because the moment that you apologize, you're truly sunk. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, no question. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was holding the door open for someone at a restaurant, and I didn't see someone else coming, and I let the door go, and it closed on that person who was coming. I turned around and I apologized. I said, I'm sorry. You know, in that context, that makes sense. That's right. But, you know, if a slip of the lip gets you hung by the tongue, right, you tie a knot with your tongue, you can't untie with your teeth. And then suddenly everybody wants to come and say, you need to apologize for these words. You take Dave Chappelle.
So Demi, I think it was Demi Lovato, went over to Israel. I think they sort of gave her a trip because they wanted the publicity. And she went to Israel and she got baptized and she enjoyed her trip. And so she posted about it. I think that was sort of a deal. And then they came after her. How dare she support Israel?
Right.
So she apologized. She's not canceled.
And I recall, absolutely, you should not engage in that. Right. Look, that's the beauty of individualism. And listen, I wear a shirt that has FJB on it or Let's Go Brandon. Right. And somebody says that offends me. Well, that's your problem. That's not my problem. Offendedness is not your currency. You don't get to spend that somewhere. We're not out collecting offenses. And so, you know, you take again from the comedy world, Kevin Hart. You know, he made a tweet about not wanting his son to be gay 10 years ago. And then he goes on this huge apology tour. You know, he's on Ellen and everywhere else. And no matter where he goes to do a media hit, they're asking him to apologize again. You cannot give in to that, or else you will spend the rest of your life. Say what you want to say, mean what you say. And hey, if you regret it, you regret it. But at the end of the day, own it.
Right. Okay. So talk to me about Am I Crazy? Like, what are people going to get out of the book?
So again, like I say, it's a common sense guide to the end of the world culturally. And it arms people. It helps them talk about how they're raising their kids, how they're engaging in relationships, how they face the media, and all these various things that are coming at us in the world. But it gives you a good laugh. Hey, it's a consumable book. If you don't like it, the toilet paper shortage is real. You can just use it for that as well. You read it in the bathroom, tear the pages out, go to work. I don't recommend you do that if you're reading on a Kindle. But folks can get the book, and I encourage you, it's a great holiday gift. It's a beautiful hardback book, and it's got my face on it. What could go wrong? I even wear a great jacket on the cover. So you can throw darts at it if you get bored.
How did you decide to run for governor?
I was with Don Trump Jr. in South Dakota last year on the 2nd of July, and in South Dakota, my phone went off, my notifications went off, and Greg Abbott had passed another shutdown mandate in the state of Texas, deeming businesses and people non-essential. And again, I don't know if it was because I was drinking an extra glass of wine or I was with a Trump, but I went to Twitter and said, I'm going to run for governor in 2022. And the place, you know, the cyber world erupted. We jumped in, we jumped on board, we got into this thing. And no matter what happens in this election, we win because we're holding real conservatives. We're holding politicians accountable with real conservatism. And it's a great journey. And I love this state and I want to keep it red.
Are you optimistic about the future? Because I sense a great deal of pessimism, and I try to be optimistic. I am optimistic, actually. So I look at all of the social media stuff that's coming, the competition, the social media competition, and the fact that Facebook now has a bit of a black eye. And by the way, nobody I've talked to believed that the whistleblower was anything but somebody who was handed a whistle by Zuckerberg himself, basically.
Zuckerberg. Yep.
Right. So nobody bought 100%. That charade. And in fact, it's there's something that's magical that's happening where people are understanding in an age where we're masking, the masks are actually coming down. Right. And so we see that it's all political theater, all of it, like really all of it. Right.
Yeah. You know, one of the ways that we communicate our message is I have an apparel company, Unapologetic Patriot, and people can get it at my website, watchchad.com, the same place you can pick up the book. And we have, you know, hats and shirts that say mandate freedom and freedom over fear and you know, all these various things that kind of communicate to the world that hey, we're about freedom here. You know, and you talk, and I sometimes I do want to get a little pessimistic. I'm an optimistic person as well, because I think that the remnant always rises up and comes forward, and God has his folks that you know, speak that message. And, you know, we're living in a state where in the last 18 months, we have a governor that violated our constitutional rights over a dozen times. And I don't like that, right? I don't want a Republican in office. I want a real conservative Republican in office. You know, we look to Ron DeSantis in Florida. I'm like, this is Texas. Florida doesn't have a waffle iron in the shape of its state. We do. You know, I mean, Texas is unique in a very big way. We have our own toast. You know, if this is something that I want us to get back to and make Texas number one and a great place. But unfortunately, we're watering it down in a big, big way.
Have you heard people talking about the divorce that seems to be happening in the nation, like the national divorce?
Well, that's obviously a conversation that happens a lot in the state of Texas because the issue of secession is often discussed. Texit, you know, we have a House Bill 1439, which is, you know, the Texit bill that gives people the right to vote on the process of being able to separate from the union. But, you know, there's a big conglomerate of states. There's a lot of people out there that consider themselves red states that are being overrun and ruled by blue cities, unfortunately. And they don't feel represented. And this is that remnant of folks who they love this country and they want to fight for freedom.
All right. Well, you're doing your part. I'm trying to do my part. I hope people will go to Prather2022.com. And your website is watchprather.com.
Watch Chad. Watchchad.com.
Sorry. It's not okay. In my notes. Watchchad.com. And I'm going to go there and buy merchandise for Christmas, including your book, Am I Crazy? Even though I know I'm not crazy. And I know you're not crazy.
Sure you are, Sam. Trust me, I know you're crazy. Believe me, it's the right kind of crazy. And I appreciate what you do. Thank you for your voice, Sam.
Thanks so much for coming on, Chad. We'll see you soon. Bye. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. My guest now is Matt Brainerd. He's the former director of data and strategy for the Trump campaign. He also drafted and executed the strategy for targeting low propensity voters who had a high affinity for President Trump. And after the 2020 general election, Matt founded and led the Voter Integrity Project to discover illegal ballots and other election anomalies. Is that what we're calling them now, Matt? Anomalies?
Well, I think that's probably the most reliable term. I just go with illegal ballots. I think we've documented enough of them so far in the states of Georgia and Wisconsin to show that they surpassed the margin of victory in those two states. Right now, we're working on that same project in Arizona and Pennsylvania.
So describe for me what you mean. They surpassed the margin of victory. What does that mean?
Well, look at Georgia, for example. There are almost 5 million ballots cast. The margin of victory was around 11,000, give or take. We have been able to document that the number of illegal ballots, ballots cast by people who should not have been able to cast those ballots, surpassed the margin of victory. And if you think about it, out of about 5 million ballots, the idea that there were maybe 11 or 12,000 people who didn't have residency in the state, who weren't properly registered, et cetera, cast ballots, it's not that far-fetched. And once the number of illegal ballots surpasses the margin of victory, that means you can no longer know for certain who actually won. So our assertion is that across the country, there were more illegal ballots cast than the margin of victory in enough states, such that not only do you not know who won several states, but it's also indeterminate who actually won the election. We do not know who the deserved winner of the election is. That's different language than some other people have used where they insist the election was stolen. Now, I definitely believe that the election was rigged based on the media suppression of stories about Joe Biden. We saw that, and we saw other things that rigged the election by making the threshold to vote much easier in blue areas or areas that support President Biden than those that supported President Trump. We saw that extensively across the country. But we've been able to document that we believe at least we can prove to a reasonable standard beyond a reasonable doubt that the deserved winner is unknown.
Fascinating. So it's interesting because there was also a campaign. Did you start in Georgia for any particular reason? Because there was a campaign by I would say left-wing Biden supporters, as I recall, to encourage people to go to Georgia to vote because you didn't have to have lived there. You didn't have to prove residency, something along those lines. Talk to me about that.
Sure. Well, the state and the Secretary of State did a very bad job of maintaining their voter list. And we were able to identify seven tranches of illegal ballots But we were only able to ascertain how many were in three or four of those tranches. So there are three other tranches of illegal ballots that only the state has the ability to identify, because we're an outside organization. We have access to some government databases, but not nearly as much as the state does. So what you're saying is something that we actually identified. We found many people who lived in New York or California and had done so for many years, but they were still able to get a ballot and cast it. But if the state were to engage in such an investigation on their own, they would have found many, many more. In fact, the same technique we used to identify illegal ballots in the 2020 general election, the Secretary of State used that same strategy to remove over 100,000 people from the voter rolls just a few months ago.
That's amazing. I'm sorry. All right. Talk to me about J6, because there's a thing called Justice for J6 that you're involved in.
That is a movement that I'm proud to say Look Ahead America has been leading all the way back to January. On January 28th, we sent a letter to the Department of Justice and the FBI demanding that they treat the nonviolent protesters at the January 6th rally at the Capitol the same way they treated protesters historically, whether they were at the Kavanaugh hearings protesting those illegally, trespassing, parading, etc., whether they were with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez storming the Speaker's office and occupying that illegally. So we were asking for equal treatment, and the Department of Justice ignored us. So we started holding rallies around the country. The first one we held was right in front of the Department of Justice, and that was in June. I stood on a flatbed truck with a megaphone. We only had an audience of about 20 people there that we were able to turn out for that event. Look Ahead America is a new organization. We're still getting started. We're only about 8 months old. After that, though, we held an event at the jail where the prisoners were actually able to hear us to raise the profile of their mistreatment there. And we held 8 simultaneous rallies across the country. Then on September 18th, we held our largest rally, which was at the U.S. Capitol building. And despite so many threats from the left, so many threats from the right, death threats directed at me personally, we still had a very successful rally with over 400 attendees there, hundreds of media, thousands of media hits all across the country about our event, raising the profile of this. And we also held 18 rallies across the country at state capitals, urging those state capitals to pass resolutions instructing their federal legislators to demand justice from the Justice Department. We condemn all political violence. We condemn the political violence that happened on January 6th. But the vast majority of the people that were there and the vast majority of those that have been charged and prosecuted, they engaged in things a little more than misdemeanors like trespassing. Yet the Department of Justice is hunting them down like they're domestic terrorists. And this disparate treatment is a violation of these people's constitutional rights, and it's immoral, and we're happy to stand up for them.
How can people support your organization or find out more about your rallies and more about justice for the, and so J6 stands for January 6th. So it's justice for the prisoners based on January 6th. By the way, have you done anything since the FBI came out and said there were no weapons for this so-called insurrection?
No weapons.
By the way, can I just say, like the people who were supposedly fomenting the insurrection are the people who are the pro Second Amendment people. They are armed to their teeth, right? And so how do you justify saying that it was an insurrection by people who generally are armed to their teeth, but they all forgot their weapons?
Well, the narrative is what matters to the mainstream media and to the political left. The narrative there being an insurrection, because that's the premise for so many of their other totalitarian initiatives, all their other policies, things they're trying to do like purge patriots from the military or enforce CRT in the federal government because there was this white nationalist insurrection on January 6th. That's why these people are being held unjustly, some of them now for 9-10 months now, held in solitary confinement for not anything violent, but for just protesting in the wrong place at the wrong time. So that narrative has to survive for them. And that's why these people are being persecuted. And we're finding there's no evidence of any conspiracy, no evidence of, there's no weapons on anybody arrested inside the Capitol building.
Right,
and
but they've learned that if they disseminate the self-incriminating information, the stuff that sort of changes the narrative, if they disseminate it slowly enough, and on a Friday when nobody's really paying attention, like, they've learned how to control the story so that it just becomes sort of a non-issue, right?
That's why, that's why we need alternative media like you. Yeah. Here's the reality, though. Nobody that matters to us politically takes CNN or MSNBC or any of them seriously anyway.
Right. They've destroyed their own brand. They've destroyed their own credibility at this point, right?
Exactly. Well, to answer your question, Look Ahead America is about community organizing, and that is powered by volunteers and money. If you can help us by volunteering, we have leadership right now in over 35 states. You can sign up to volunteer and we will put you to work. If you can help us financially, a lot of what we do is very expensive. It's not cheap to hold these rallies. It's not cheap to run this organization, to be able to put out the research we're doing on voter integrity. You can support us at lookaheadamerica.org and make a donation or sign up to volunteer, or best of all, both.
You've done an amazing thing, and I really commend you. This is totally grassroots. This is, you know, a vision to save the nation and to hold people accountable based on moral truth, right?
Absolutely. And yeah. I appreciate you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Matt, for coming on the show. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. I'll be right back. All right. And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. So my guest now is a recent acquaintance of mine, somebody who helped me through a little bit of a struggle recently. And I thought, what a great opportunity to bring you guys this individual. His name is Dr. Mark Sherwood, and he's a naturopathic doctor, an ND. He also works with his wife, which I have to say, I really applaud and approve of, or whatever. She's a doctor of osteopathy. They have a full-time wellness-based medical practice in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's called the Functional Medical Institute. They adopt a whole person approach, which is outcome-based, looking at each individual's unique needs. He is also a 2022 gubernatorial candidate for Oklahoma, so you might have an idea of where he stands on things. You can go find him at Sherwood2022.com, Sherwood2022.com. The couple have co-authored several books on Amazon, and we'll get into that. But first, let me present Dr. Mark Sherwood. Thanks so much for joining me.
Sam, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here. And thank you for letting me help you with the issue we're talking about. Honored to do that.
All right. We don't have to mince our words. I had COVID, and yeah. I suspected that it was COVID very early on. And it happened that I had just been introduced to Mark, Dr. Mark, the day before I started having symptoms. And I have to say, your approach really helped me. I don't freak out about things. However, every time you sent me a text, just sort of reassuring me that this is the natural process. Yes, it's painful, because I have to say what I got was nasty. And maybe 36 hours I was out, and it was very painful. Entire body aches and fever. And so just not doing anything today. I'm in bed and plowing through. But your approach was, the fever is good. That's the body's natural immune response, not immune response, but the body's natural response to fight an infection. They're battling it out. And I was just sort of the unwilling bystander in a sense. COVID came in, took over, tried to, you know, really win the war. And my body won instead through the health that I already had, and also some supplements that you suggested for me. And then about, I guess it was maybe a week later, I completely lost my taste and my smell. And it was weird because I felt it go. Have you talked to people like that?
That's a weird phenomenon. You know, I went through that myself and I was like, holy cow, I've never felt worse in my life. And that's something that we need to understand, Sam. And we were talking through this, and the irony of that was the day we sort of initiated our relationship, we talked on the phone. The next day, you're like, you're not going to believe this. And it was just like that fast. So I guess everything happens for a reason, but you battled through it. You're better than ever now. And it's awesome.
No, it is awesome. But I wanted to ask you, because you've treated a number of patients. How many patients have you treated through COVID?
Oh, gosh. I mean, we started counting when we got to 4,000 or 5,000, and now it's over 9,000.
Yeah. Okay. And I just want to know other people's experience. Have you heard people go, oh, yeah, I knew the moment the taste left. Like, I just couldn't smell anymore. Like, I felt it go. It just sort of went. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't taste or smell.
We have had people do that. It hasn't happened every time, though, Sam. It's been interesting. So the symptoms have varied. We've had people that have had GI disturbances, muscle aches, breath issues, like having a hard time getting their respiratory situation right, and then the taste. But it does have a varying effect on people. But you're going to, you know, go through this, and the taste is going to come back, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, it has come back. I'm perfectly fine now. And in fact, my daughter also the same weekend, and she wasn't feeling well, but she was like fine. Like it wasn't like a big deal at all. She's 15. So her body just sort of said, really, you're going to try that here? I don't think so. And it was like done. But a week later, same timing for me, we both lost our sense of taste and smell. And so it was like, well, that was definitely COVID, because there's nothing else that's going around that's doing that right now, you know?
Well, good news is, now that you've had COVID, I really believe this, that, you know, God made our bodies, you know, perfect. And I believe the immune system has now a permanent, imprinted, adaptive immune response, so that anytime something like that comes in or comes on you or tries to infect you or affect you, your body's going to build an antibody to that very effectively. I've tested this with numerous people, you know, that have, you know, done the vaccine or not. And I've seen the antibodies from the natural response be very persistent up to a year or two later. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool, especially with some of the data that's now coming out about this disease and about people who have been vaccinated. But let's talk a little bit about what else you do, because obviously you're in tune with the whole wellness of the individual, and you have these books. And so I guess a question is, you talk about the seven pillars of wellness, which is not the same as the five pillars of Islam or whatever.
No, quite different. So we look at the human body in a holistic approach. You know, certainly I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the emotional and spiritual health, because the majority of people's physical manifestations of disease, Sam, are truly rooted in this emotional and spiritual brokenness, which is kind of crazy. And we can dive into that a minute if you want to. But from the physical standpoint of health, which has to be dealt with, mastered, and we have to put effort in there. There are seven pillars we deal with: nutrition, sleep, stress management, and movement. Those are the first four, because those four we actually have control over, which is kind of cool. That's our responsibility. The other three are going to be genetics, which you didn't have control over. So we understand that. We want to work through that process. Hormones. We tend to lose hormone functionality as we age, which has a very integral effect on the prevention of heart, brain, bone disease, but also has a very pronounced effect on the effectiveness of your immune system. How cool is that? And then we talk about peptides, which are just amino acids that are compounded together in a compounding pharmacy for us, that can rebuild things like brain tissues. They can build muscle. They can lose fat. They can heal up GI symptoms, and they're really awesome. So that's the seven pillars that we use. And when you get those things mastered, you can have a pretty high quality of life.
Right. And it's strange to say that it seems like our medical community, in a sense, discounts a number of those, because they're always turning towards the drugs, right?
They are. And that's one side of the coin. You know, the allopathic medicine model is symptom, algorithm, medication. Symptom, algorithm, medication. It goes on and on. And not that that's bad. Sometimes you need that, not bashing that. But
no, because there are some medicines that are great. But I'll tell you something. My husband went through 3 years of torture because he had three strokes. Hmm. And the first, his sort of whole introduction into it after he got sick was all of these drugs that they kept prescribing, none of which helped him, all of which he had terrible side effects from. And then I remember one in particular, he went off of it, and a lot of them were antidepressants that they just go, well, take an antidepressant, yep, because you have head injury, and so you know, this is a life change or whatever. The one that he went on, I believe it was Buspar, but I'm not sure. When he went off of it, he got worse. And so he called the doctor and he said, I feel worse. And the doctor said, well, it's not the medication, because you're off the medication. So then he called the I said, wait a minute. I said, because I'm clever this way, I said, let's call a pharmacist. And we asked the pharmacist, oh no, because he asked the doctor, could there be like withdrawal symptoms? And the doctor's like, no. The pharmacist said, oh, absolutely, there are withdrawal symptoms.
Absolutely.
And so some of the hardship that we go through is, in a sense, it's almost self-imposed, because we don't know where to look for answers. And I find that, and that's why I started this interview mentioning the way you treated me, and the way that you helped me, more than anything else, was just the reassurance, was like, oh yeah, that's going to happen, and then it'll get better. And that reassurance from somebody who's who's walked people through it before. And I knew at the time that you had treated like 9,000 COVID patients. I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. You know what I mean?
Well, I do, Sam. And the thing is that, you know, I like to say my wife, who's my queen, best friend, buddy, and pal, and it's a privilege and honor to work with her every day. I mean, we're like this. It's good. We're best buddies. But it's really important to give people hope.
Yes.
There's too much negativity in the world. And when you can give people hope, you know, like I did, and I didn't do it just to give you hope. I believed you. You know, I was sincere. And when you can give people sincere hope, it fuels the fire of life and belief in them again. And people die with lack of hope. But when they have hopefulness, they also have faithfulness. And that hopefulness and faithfulness and just the ability of the human body to do extraordinary things is contagious. And it is something that we should be sharing. And I like to say, you know, everybody we deal with, become a hope dealer, you know, and go give it away freely, right?
That's right. Okay. So I want to talk to you briefly about your books and the kind of medicine that you're practicing. But I'm going to take a quick break. Before the break, tell people how they can find you.
So we created a special link for you for all of the Sam Sorbo fans out there.
Right.
Remember that. So you're going to go to Sherwood.tv/Sam. And all of our processes are there. We've got all of good information that you can just put into practice right now for free. Sherwood.tv/Sam.
There you go. Okay, great. So a quick break here, and then I will be back. For those of you on podcast and radio, thanks so much for tuning in today. This is the Sam Sorbo Show.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.